This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. Thank you for joining us for our radio Main Street across North Dakota this time of day. The same time we broadcast, we stream at prairiepublic.org, and thank you for listening there as well. And today we're going to start our discussion with an author, sort of a new author, if you will. He had another career before he started writing a big book called Dakota Attitude, Interviews from Every Town in North Dakota. Jim Puppy, thanks for being with us today.
Well, thank you, Doug.
Tell us a bit about yourself. I mentioned you did something before you went on this adventure.
Well, I was raised about 6 miles from a small town called Hensel. It is in Pembina County, just an extreme northeastern part of North Dakota, and went to country school. There were two in my first grade, and also went to a country church, which was nearby. Upon graduation from Cavalier High School, I attended the North Dakota State School of Forestry, and also from there I went to the University of North Dakota, graduated, was drafted into the Army, and spent 2 years in service, 1967 and 1969, part of which I spent in Vietnam. From there I came back and I worked for the Veterans Administration. I rated disability. But the life-changing experience I had at the Veterans Administration was working with the former prisoners of war.
Oh.
And I was their advocate. At one time, there's probably a high of 150 former prisoners of war that I worked with and then helped with their benefits.
Most of these would have been Vietnam veterans? Or
most of these would be World War II veterans.
Oh, from older veterans.
Older veterans, yeah. The ones from the European theater and the former Japanese prisoners of war.
Well, and then you became an advocate for veterans and retired from that job?
Exactly right. And I heard that one time years ago that we know more about the soil of North Dakota than what we know about the people. And so there was something that was in my mind, or the idea that, we need to, or at least I wanted to find out what the people of North Dakota were all about. So I started out and with the idea that I was going to visit somebody from every town in North Dakota. So open up the North Dakota map and went from there.
And even in a small state like North Dakota, there are lots of towns, over 600 of them, huh?
Well, actually about 400 and some towns that's on the map. My basis was the North Dakota roadmap. So if the town was on a map, I was after. I was there.
Well, some of those towns that are on the map aren't really there anymore.
You're exactly right. There's a couple of the villages that are listed where there's no population. So I had to chase somebody down that used to live there.
Now, had you written other things when you set about writing this book?
Well, I did some family histories. My grandparents, both my mother's and my father's side. But this was kind of a new venture for me.
And this venture took 11 years of your life, a fair amount of time.
Yeah, it did. It took quite a while. Well, most of the work was done during the summer months when I would travel in my van and I had a sleeping bag in there, eat peanut butter sandwiches and jelly sandwiches, and it was fun.
Well, you must have sampled some cafe fare along the way.
Well, not too much, but the people I interviewed, most of the interviews took place at the kitchen table. And good coffee and good homemade bread, donuts and cookies and homemade soups. Oh, they were just so cordial.
Well, you started in 2004, mm-hmm. and you put a lot of miles on your Dodge van.
Mm-hmm.
How many?
Well, we totaled it up 113,000 miles in my travels throughout the state.
What was your process when you'd go into a town? I suppose you had to explain what you were doing there and maybe get some direction about who you might want to talk to.
Well, the first thing I did is I told them I was a native North Dakota myself. I'm an old farm boy, and that seemed to help. I'd stop in at a cafe or see somebody on the street or any place where there's somebody. And sometimes you had to look pretty hard because there wasn't much activity in some of these smaller towns. And then I would find out who in that town was somebody of good human spirit, somebody that had optimism, good moral values, and integrity. And so they would refer me to this person. And, you know, Doug, they were right.
Yeah.
I got some beautiful people and some people of real deep wisdom. And that's what I was after.
And I read in a story that Patrick Springer wrote for Forum News Service that you typically look for older residents of the town because they might offer some historical perspective about the place.
Well, that's it. And it also, an older person has a more chance to experience things in life.
Sure.
So they have a longer period of time to reflect. And that's what I was after. When I visit with these people, I find out about their younger lives and what information or what experiences they had to make them what they are at that time.
So you're recording these interviews?
They are all recorded. Each interview probably averaged about 45 minutes apiece. And I had them sign a release of information so I could use it for publication. And also a photograph of each person that's shown in the book. So there's 617 stories and 617 photographs.
And it's organized by county. So it starts with Adams County. And
that's correct.
Goes right through Williams County.
Exactly.
And in the counties, it's organized. The towns are organized alphabetically as well.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What when you set out, Jim, were you planning to write a book or were you just planning to gather some histories or –
What I really wanted to do is that, I don't know what it is, but I think God gave me the ability to sit down and visit with somebody and extract information, little virtues of their life that could be shared with others, and take this, and I wanted to place it into a book so I can share it with others.
Well, the book is titled Dakota Attitude. Jim Puppy is the author. And as I understand in some of the introductory material in the book, that your late daughter-in-law, Sarah, suggested the title.
Right. Sarah passed away about 3 years ago. She died of a brain tumor, and she was literary in many different areas and had interest in writing herself, but unfortunately her life was taken and she didn't have the opportunity to complete it.
As you mentioned, you used a highway map to chart your course across the state. What was the smallest place you tried to gather information in? And you mentioned some of these towns weren't there, and that meant you had to go someplace else to find somebody who'd lived there.
Right. Well, I think Fillmore, North Dakota, I think is one person that comes to my mind.
Huh.
And he lived there for a number of years, and I asked him about future plans. Well, they're going to have to carry him out feet first, he says. So that was probably very indicative amongst people that there's an old German saying, home is where you were rocked in a cradle. And I think this surfaced when I was out there. People love to be where they were at. And that was home. They're very familiar with it. And they knew everything about the town. If you didn't know, you just ask them.
Well, Sarah, your daughter-in-law, mm-hmm. that titled Dakota Attitude, mm-hmm. What does that suggest to you when you put out a book that says Dakota Attitude? What's Dakota Attitude?
Well, I think it's special virtues that people have in North Dakota, the honesty, the integrity, and also untapped resources out there that we could really learn from. And I think that the attitude of North Dakota is something that we can really be proud of because we're special people.
Let's listen to a sample of one of the interviews you conducted. This is with Lydia Rorick. She's in Strasburg, North Dakota. For people who have the book, she's on page 189. And her story starts in your telling of it. She was married in 1948. They first lived with her parents for a couple of days. Then they moved in with his folks. Let's listen to her.
And then you lived with his folks?
Till in fall, they moved to town, and then we were on the farm.
Okay. So did you have was there another bedroom in the house? Or?
Well, upstairs. Yeah. And I bet you it was 100 hot every night.
But you were still happy?
Oh.
Didn't make any difference?
Didn't make any difference. No fan, no electricity, nothing. We didn't have no money.
It was
the boys
stuck.
Were going to take us along to the movie, and my husband said, no,
What boys?
We don't have money. He's a neighbor to my husband.
Okay.
And didn't have money.
You didn't have money to go to a movie in Strasbourg.
So we stayed home, but we didn't care.
Well, I slept in the upstairs of a two-story house.
Yeah.
And in August, it gets hot.
Oh.
But no problem. You were happy, huh?
So happy.
So would you be with him during the day out in the field then, or?
No, I was home with his mother and the dad. You know, they did back. And I told that to the girls that first summer. And I don't like to iron, but I just love to iron his shirts. Isn't that so silly?
That's Lydia Rorick from Jim Puppy's book, Dakota Attitude, interviews from every town in North Dakota. Of course, we mentioned, Jim, that she's from Strasbourg, North Dakota, one of the favorite sons of North Dakota, came from there. That's Lawrence Welk, and that turns out that was her uncle.
That's correct.
That's a small town.
Mm-hmm.
Your storytelling here is interesting because you spent all this time interviewing these people. You've got what is, I think, a wealth of information for an archive of some sort. But you had to take that interview and boil it down, distill it down to like a 350-word, one-page essay. That takes a lot of work.
It's difficult to do for an untrained literary person as me. But I had help from Chandice Johnson, who formerly taught at NDSU. He was very helpful and we tried to keep the voice of the person. We didn't want to lose that. So he was very helpful and make sure that what the vet – or here I go back. I go back to my former employment, a veteran. But, I mean, as the interview spoke, we wanted to capture that and maintain that throughout. And also I had editor Victoria, which was, you know, whom was very, very good at it. And we were able to get it down to about 300 to 350 words per page. So.
Wow. Well, you went home. You went up to Pembina County, went back to Hensel, didn't you?
I sure did.
And so who did you pick there?
Well, I didn't pick a neighbor or a relative. I picked somebody from the other side of town, one of the Icelanders up in that area.
No shortage of them.
Yeah, yeah. And he was referred to me as just a very hard worker all his life and raised a number of children and just in a small acreage and milked cows. He was in dairy business for an entire life, spent time in war during World War II and very, very admired by others.
How much time would you spend in a town, not necessarily Hensel, but, you know, like Strasbourg?
Well, on the average, I'd say about an hour and a half. I would drive in kind of cold turkey and then look around what was happening there in town and whom I could visit with and kind of start up a conversation with somebody. I wouldn't tell them I was from out east or anything. I was one of you people.
Well, you must have had quite a spiel because that's pretty efficient, going into a town an hour and a half later, heading down the road to the next one.
Well, it worked. And initially, you know, when I knocked on somebody's door that whom was referred to me, maybe the door just opened a few inches, but then after we stood there and talked for just a short period of time, then they were willing to sit down and visit with me.
Well, some of these stories must have been absolutely fascinating, too. Again, I'll refer to Patrick Springer's piece in the Forum News Service back in earlier in January. He talked about you interviewing Pauline Roll of Heil in Grant County, a mother who had 21 children in 21 years.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
What a beautiful lady she was. She was in her mid-80s and 21 kids. 21 years. By the way, there are two sets of twins in there, so that helped out with the numbers.
Well, that's a heck of a big family, though. All of those all those kids, the grandkids, great-grandkids, that must be a heck of a reunion.
Yeah, it certainly would be. Yeah, yeah. And she just so such a pleasant person. Seemed like she would take things by the smooth handle and well adjusted.
Now, this is 16 years ago. You started on this mission that ended up with the book Dakota Attitude: Interviews from Every Town in North Dakota. There must be lots of people you talked to since you were talking to older residents of the town who are no longer with us.
I would say between 30% and 35% of the people whom I've interviewed have passed.
So this becomes a treasure to the members of their family, I suspect.
Oh, yes, yes.
Well, let's talk about putting out a book that could be a doorstop. This is a heavy, big book. It's over 600 pages. Each page tells one story. And, of course, there's an index to it as well. How did you get to the point of producing a book? It's not a cheap prospect.
Well, I worked with Fargo Printing, and they were very helpful over there and understanding, and they knew that they were working with an amateur, somebody with no experience with this. And
this is Forum Publications?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. And we didn't know if we should put the book in four separate books or two. And I decided that why not try and put it all into one book? Easier for sales and more distribution. But we had to sharpen ourselves in trying to get the right story for each one for each person of 300 to 350 words a piece. So,
well, the book sells for about $30. It's a very substantial book, as I mentioned. It's got a lot of photographs in it. So this book, which sells for $30, how many have you sold? How many copies?
Well, we just we're thinking about a third printing at this time. Wow. But we sold over 4,000 copies already.
Yeah. Well, it probably helps to interview a lot of people because I suspect Mom and Dad and the kids would like to have a copy of the book.
Well, I imagine for marketing that would be.
You weren't thinking about that, huh?
Well,
just got lucky?
Yeah. Well, some were not so lucky in that respect either. Some didn't have children. But overall, yeah. Talking about the size of the book, Dr. Bonnemeyer, a retired dentist in Fargo, he's featured in the book. He's a former prisoner of war. He called me up and he said, Jim, he said, I have a complaint. And I said, oh, really? Yeah, a complaint about the book. And I didn't know what it was. I started to get a little nervous and I didn't know what he's going to tell me. And I said, well, what's the complaint? He says, the book is too heavy, he said. He says, for a 95-year-old man to be laying in bed and holding up this book, he says, it's too heavy.
Well, maybe there's an audio version coming out for a very long car trip.
Okay.
Jim Puppy is the author of Dakota Attitude, interviews from every town in North Dakota. It's really a fascinating read. So thank you, Jim, for stopping by Main Street.
Well, thank you, Doug.
Especially after going to so many. Coming up on Main Street, a story from National Public Radio, Indigenous Women Fight Back.
On this week's Prairie Public Presents, we bring you two programs in honor of Black History Month. First, it's Songs of the People, Indigenous Roots of Black Folk Music, which traces its connections to the traditional music of the First Nations of America.
Black and Native people are uniquely positioned to understand each other. One, a people of stolen lands, and the other, a stolen people.
Then on Artworks, we dive deep into Isabel Wilkerson's book, The Warmth of Other Suns, the epic story of America's Great Migration, which brought vibrant African-American culture to the entire country.
Toni Morrison's parents migrated from Alabama to Ohio. She would have had the opportunity to go to integrated schools and just walk into a library and take out a book.
Songs of the People and Artworks. Don't miss it Sunday afternoon at 5 Central on Prairie Public.
You're listening to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. A ceremony in March to honor Indigenous people who've gone missing or been murdered will take place tomorrow in Fargo. It's an annual event that began in 2015. Nationally, Indigenous women are kidnapped or murdered at a rate 10 times higher than the national average for other incidents of that sort. Some Native American women are learning how to fight back, as we hear in this story from Boston Public Radio reporter Quincy Walters.
Before the self-defense class starts, there's serenity. Shanda Poitra burned sage and smudged, asking any Native energies to be with her.
I just prayed in my mind, thanking the Creator for opportunities and being with me today and helping me really get the point across.
The point? Native women have a basic right to protect themselves.
Okay, hands by your ears, feet planted close to your butt. Ready? Go!
No!
Set up. Kick.
No!
This class, tailored for Indigenous women, is taking place in Everett, Massachusetts on this particular day. The women come from tribes in Massachusetts, North Dakota, and El Salvador. They learn how to recognize threats, how to de-escalate them, and how to strike attackers in the groins. The class culminates with Poitra teaching women how to defend themselves against someone who tries to sexually assault them while they're sleeping. She's laying down on her stomach on the floor, and a man gets on top of her.
Okay, so I wait for his full body pressure to come on. So once his full body pressure is on me, okay.
While still on her stomach, Poitra lifts her right leg towards her chest and leverages all of that accumulated weight, and then
I heave up, knocking him off of me. So this is a very explosive move. It only works when all his weight is on me. Look, assess.
Recently, President Trump signed an executive order creating a task force that will look into why so many Native women's lives are disrupted or ended because of trauma. But Poitra, who's from the Turtle Mountain tribe in North Dakota, says she's not waiting on the government to save her people.
Historically, the government hasn't been very good to Native people, to say the least. And so I just think it's time that we start empowering ourselves and start turning it around ourselves.
Poitra is a survivor of domestic violence. She took a self-defense class and was able to get out of her situation. Now she wants to help other women from different tribes across the country.
No!
Many who take the hours-long class not only find it physically grueling, but emotionally taxing, like Kristen Wyman, who teared up learning the techniques.
Almost as if my ancestors, my aunties, my grandmothers, everybody was with me that knows what our women face. And just to see the power in that moment of that scenario was real.
The class is designed to be taught to Native women by Native women. And Rachel Devaney tells the group that aspect is important to her.
It is so empowering learning from other Native people. Connecting with you guys in that way is really amazing for me, just as a Native woman.
Men take part in the class as well. Two of them wear football padding and very reinforced helmets to kind of serve as human punching bags. Michael Davis of the Turtle Mountain tribe, whose traditional name is Fire Spirit, says he's volunteered because too many Native women have had their fire taken away through violence. He's seen it firsthand.
I have an auntie. I could have definitely benefited it. She might still be alive today if she would have known these tactics or that she could empower herself to say no, to step away, or maybe fought back one time and deterred him and maybe make him think twice.
Davis says the class will hopefully help Native women preserve their fire. At the end of the class, an instructor sings a song that memorializes the lives of all missing and murdered Indigenous women. We will always remember you, warrior women. You are in our hearts and in our minds. For NPR News, I'm Quincy Walters.
That report aired on NPR's Morning Edition in January. Coming up on Main Street, Sue Balcom joins us for Main Street Eats, and we'll look at our What's Happening calendar of things to do. First, the news.
From the Prairie Public Newsroom, I'm Todd McDonald. Officials with the Grand Forks National Weather Service say the latest flood outlook contains mixed news for much of the Red River Valley and the region.
The January 23rd outlook remained pretty close to remaining valid. I haven't had a whole lot of precipitation or snowfall. Pretty mild for the most part, so our frost depth continues to be pretty shallow, especially compared to last spring. But the bad news is that the stuff that already happened and fell, precipitation that fell earlier in the winter and fall, is still there.
Hydrologist Amanda Lee says early forecasts are pointing toward a cool, wet spring. Lee says that could cause issues as we deal with spring runoff. She says based on the latest modeling, the possibility of seeing a top five flood this season still exists.
Definitely south of Grand Forks, maybe even further south, are the best chances for having top five. Like I said earlier, the tributaries up on the northern end of the valley on the North Dakota and Minnesota side are going to see lesser. So I'm not going to say anything about top five flood up there, but especially up and down the Red River itself. Those are the best chances for reaching those kinds of levels.
Lee says the good news from the latest round of numbers is that snowfall since mid-January has been low to near normal. The next round of probabilistic flood numbers will be issued in 2 weeks. Several groups are trying to shine a light on what they call a big problem in North Dakota, the disappearance of independent grocery stores in small towns. A new program called Rural Grocery Initiative is aimed at keeping these stores open. The Association of Rural Electric Cooperatives says there are only 98 full-service grocery stores in North Dakota communities with less than 2,100 people. That's why the association is working with groups such as the North Dakota Farmers Union on solutions through this initiative. The union's Jason McKinney says people living in these towns need a good range of food options.
We need to have food in these communities to help people stay in their homes longer and to have another access to food, quality, healthy food.
Those involved with the effort say declining farming populations are a contributing factor. They also cite larger chains and bigger communities attracting customers away, along with a distribution system that makes it harder for small stores to keep their prices down. McKinney says the distribution system is the biggest hurdle he sees when looking at why these stores are struggling.
So we just have a lot of trucks running across North Dakota that are not full, or they're making five different stops and not dropping enough hardly to make the stops.
While officials who oversee the program say they're still trying to map out a range of solutions, they say one plan they're trying out is to get grocers to buy their products collectively, so prices might come down for them. From the Prairie Public Newsroom, I'm Todd McDonald.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Ashley Thornburg, and joining me in our Bismarck studio is Sue Balcom from the Root Cellars Farm outside of Mandan. She joins us once a week to talk about food for Main Street Eats. Sue, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And today we're going to talk about other people who want to talk about food.
Well, you know, part of what I do is actually sell to consumers. And so, as in any other business, we do have an association of North Dakota Farmer and Market Growers. And part of that is an annual conference that we have where we learn about trends and certifications and things that will affect our businesses in the future.
And this conference is coming up February 28th and 29th in Mandan at the Baymont Inn and Suites. So just for starters here, is this open to the general public or only farmers market?
Absolutely. Vendors? I would like to see more consumers show up at conferences like this, because the more they are aware of how we operate, the better our sales will be, the more comfortable they'll be with buying things from farmers at farmers markets. And then, of course, we want all the farmers market vendors to come, because it's kind of like a big old family from the state getting together to talk about what worked, what didn't work, what do we have to do, those kinds of things. So, yes, I would invite anybody who's interested in small agriculture at all to join us, because this is sponsored by the North Dakota Farmer Market and Growers Association, as well as the North Dakota Department of Agriculture.
And what is Sue Balcom most excited about for the Local Foods Conference?
Well, actually, they have some great keynote speakers here. But I will also be taking part in a demonstration that I performed for a small video we did about probably 4 or 5 years ago on testing your home canned products for pH.
Oh,
so I get to play mad scientist for a short time here and use a pH meter. As you know, the cottage food law has been circumvented by some rules this past year that went into effect on January 1st. So once again, the health department has asked us to be very diligent in what we sell to our consumers.
And the cottage food law is what allows small food producers to sell
directly
at vendors,
to, right.
So not a commercial kitchen.
Right.
Okay.
So you can do it in your home as long as you tell people that you're doing it in your home and you abide by these rules, which everything that has lots of sugar in it, like jams and jellies, that's really an acceptable product. You want to stay away from things that need to be refrigerated, like Kugan and cream-based pies. But you want to also be sure that if you're canning something, And I'm not talking about pressure canning. Pressure canning is a no-no. I'm talking about any kind of hot water bath, pickles, watermelon pickles, salsas, things like that. They have to have a low pH level, below 4.6, because that's acidic enough to prevent bacteria from growing in your food products. And I know it's kind of a pain to have to do this, but it really is kind of fun if you like science and you're interested in these things. And you cannot use pH strips to do this. You actually have to use a meter. You have to calibrate your meter, and then you have to grind up a whole jar of whatever it is you're making and test it that way. So that'll be just a small, small part of this conference. We actually have a pre-conference training that I'd like to invite anybody who is growing produce to, because it is very important as the new Food Safety Modernization Act becomes effective. You will need to eventually, if you're planning on growing your business, eventually you will have to be certified in FSMA. And right now, you can take this training. It will be the day before the conference in Mandan, but there's also one in May in Bowman. You can take this training, sponsored by the Ag Department, and you can become certified for free. Whereas if you wait until it's too late and they've already come out and inspected your farm, you're going to have to probably pay $200 for a training of this caliber.
And so, that's for the Food Safety Modernization Act.
Correct. Okay. And so sometimes as you're growing your business and you're approaching restaurants or you're approaching schools and you want to sell your produce, you know, go in there. You can go in there and you can say, look, I'm HACCP certified. I'm also FSMA certified. I've taken farm food safety training from the Entrepreneurial Center for Horticulture. And that will go so much further than you walking in there going, yeah, I'm growing fruits and vegetables and I'm just doing it the way my mom did it 25 years ago. Sometimes that doesn't work in today's world. So we really, this conference is a very important thing for people who are interested in growing their businesses.
One of the keynote speakers at this conference, and again, it's the North Dakota Farmers Market and Growers Association Local Foods Conference, February 28th and 29th at the Baymont Inn and Suites in Mandan. One of the keynotes here is Louise May from Aurora Farms, which is up in Manitoba, Canada. How come she's getting brought in?
Oh, my gosh, because she has diversified her farm to where she has a year-round income. And really, when you're small, like you're a small producer like myself, you have to be really creative about some of the things that you do. So if you get a chance to go into her website, they have alpacas and horses and chickens and sheep. She grows culinary herbs. She has a small CSA or food box program. They make goat soap milk. They raise honey. They do canning. They do baking. They invite people to their farm for workshops. You can have a party on the farm. You can come out and pet some baby goats, or you could do baby goat yoga, which I'd be curious about that. Like, I'm not sure where the baby goat part comes in, but, you know, whatever. So she's going to be the keynote on Friday morning at 10:30. She's going to talk about standing out from the crowd. And by that list of things I've just mentioned, they're doing a good job of it. She also has a 100% solar-powered sustainable or regenerative ag farm, no chemicals, large-scale composting. There isn't any topic that you couldn't ask this woman about, and she'd be happy to share.
And you also have another keynote speaker coming in, a woman who calls herself the Farm Babe.
Wish I'd have thought of that.
JC can call you that. Who's Michelle Miller?
She is actually what's called an online influencer, which means she started blogging. Somebody's started following her. Pretty soon she grew to, like, I think she has 120,000 followers. And once that happens, your regular mainstream media picks up on it. So now she's writing for Ag Daily. She's an international keynote speaker. And she lives on a farm with her sheep called Buckingham Palace. Now, isn't that adorable?
That's fabulous.
Oh, my gosh. So I can't wait to meet her either. This is just going to be really, really good. And, you know, most of the people that come off of these farms and do the kind of work that I do, we are just like so – it's so easy to share information with these people. They're so willing to talk to you about what they do because we're just so excited about the opportunities that we have to grow these small businesses in the country today.
You know, I'm noticing on the itinerary for this conference, there is a breakout session on social media. So this concept of selling direct to consumers at farmers markets, okay, fine. Someone's going to go to the farmer's market and they're going to see you. How are you using social media to grow your business?
Well, I'll tell you what. I wished I'd had social media back in the 80s when I was still weaving full time because I have had such good luck with things like Facebook and Instagram. People are curious about the process. And another thing is that you can tell people where you're going to be, when you're going to be there, and what products you're selling. I always, always email. I post. I use my website. And a lot of people are not as computer savvy at my age as I am, but I've been forced into it as a marketing person. You've got to know these things. So this social media workshop will kind of introduce people to how to not become overwhelmed by social media and how to use best practices to make it work for you. And then you're invited to bring your laptops along and actually get in there. Sign up for an Instagram account. Learn how to use these things. Facebook, Instagram. I'm not too big on Snapchat, but I have been doing, I've learned how to accept payment for things online. All of these things make purchasing your items so much easier. You can post recipes. You know, I actually have videos that show how to make great salads or paper pots for planting on my website. So it's really the wave of the future, and I would highly recommend those sessions for people who feel a little intimidated by social media.
There's another breakout session that talks about farmers markets and the role that they are playing economically within the community, which I understand, but I do want to ask you, because the person presenting this is Danielle Mickelson from Mickelson Tiny Plants. Well, what's Mickelson Tiny Plants?
You know what? That woman is from, let's see, is it Rugby, some little town up north? And she is stinking amazing because she's actually taken her tiny plant business, which I don't know why she still calls it tiny plants. She has like a store on Main Street in Rolla, North Dakota, I think is where it is, not Rugby. She's in Rolla. And so she has grown her business from raising plants to growing vegetables, to becoming part of their main street so that people in rural communities can eat healthier. Except the last time I saw her on Facebook, she was experimenting with a donut recipe. Because as you know, people like myself and Danielle will go to a restaurant and we're like, I'm going to go home and see if I can't make this myself. And so she was doing this donut recipe, and I think she actually managed. She was part of the Governor's Main Street Initiative. Yep. She was there. I talked to her when she was there. She's an ambitious young lady that I'm sure will be very, very fun to listen to. But we're all trying to get people to take us seriously. You know, we're not just fly-by-night, show up here and pop up a tent and sell something. We're business people, and we want to provide the best and healthiest foods for everyone. So I'm thinking that as the rural grocery stores struggle, they should be co-oping with people like Danielle to provide food cooperatively to people instead of relying on the trucking that is slowly, you know, fading away because nobody wants to drive 100 miles off the interstate to deliver you know, a minimum order, a minimum wholesale order. So we have to start thinking about how we're going to feed people in these small rural communities, or they're all going to move to Bismarck and we really don't have room for them anymore.
The Local Foods Conference is February 28th and 29th at the Baymont Inn and Suites in Mandan. Can people show up at the door? Or do they need to pre-register?
Yes, pre-registration is $55 for both days. You can come one day or both days. We have lots of good food, lots of locally sourced food. If you show up at the door and we don't know you're coming, you're going to probably have to pay a little bit extra, like maybe $10, but it's worth it.
All right. Thank you, Sue.
Thank you.
Next time on The Pulse, it's Oscar season, and we're looking at the science that brings movies to life. Like, how do you best create the sound of breaking bones?
They'll freeze some celery so that the water inside gets frozen, and then it's like, crunch, you know, as they twist the celery. It tricks the brain, basically, into thinking, yeah, I guess that is what that sounds like.
Movie Magic on The Pulse.
Tonight at 8 Central, 7 Mountain, here on Prairie Public. Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota.
Well, that's the question we ask every Thursday here on Main Street, and here to help me answer it is our director of radio, Bill Thomas.
Hello, and I'm going to start with a production in Bismarck. True North Theater is presenting a play called The Drawer Boy. That's D-R-A-W-E-R. And that's this weekend, February 14th and 15th, and then next weekend, the 20th and the 22nd, and February 23rd. This play is set in the summer of 1972. You got two old bachelor farmers. A young actor shows up. He's going to do a play about the plight of the farmer, and he gets a little more than he's bargained for. So that is in Bismarck, True North Theater, The Drawer Boy.
Well, I went to The Roommate by Jen Silverman at Theater B last weekend, and it was a bang-up show, great show. It runs Thursday through Saturday through February 29th with Sunday matinees on the 16th and 23rd, so this Sunday and next. These are two very different women become roommates in a funny and touching story that features two wonderful actors, Carrie Winterstein and Pam Strait. It's kind of a female odd couple, but it has more going for it than that, even. The evening performances are at 7:30. The Sunday matinees are at 2. Tickets for adults are $25. Student tickets are $7 on Thursday. Otherwise, they're $12.
And let's stick with theater. If you are a child or young at heart in or around Sydney, Montana, you're in for a treat this weekend. Friday at 12:45, Saturday at 2 p.m., the Missoula Children's Theater, they have a great reputation, is coming in with Jack and the Beanstalk at the Sydney Middle School Auditorium. That's Friday and Saturday, and I'm sure it'll be exciting.
There's a Harry Potter party, Fargo, at the Fargo Public Library on February 15th, Saturday. It's a themed event in conjunction with the traveling exhibit Renaissance Science, Magic, and Medicine in Harry Potter's World. It's based on the magical world of Harry Potter, made famous in novels and movies. It runs Saturday afternoon from 1 to 3, again at the downtown library in Fargo. It's open to kids of all ages.
And that exhibit was put together by the UND Medical School, and it is beautifully prepared. It's really, really well done.
And registration is not required.
Yep. Kisses at the Movies. If you want some kisses, go to Medora this weekend at the Interpretive Center at the Chateau des Morts. They have a whole bunch of movies featuring old Hollywood romances. My Lady of Whims with Clara Bow, The Painted Desert with Clark Gable, Charlie Chaplin double feature. You've even got The Perils of Pauline. And, you know, if you don't have somebody along to kiss, they will give you chocolate kisses.
Ah.
Saturday, 2 p.m. and 7:30 p.m.
Okay. Winterfest 2020 is in Center, North Dakota, on Saturday at the Cross Ranch State Park. The park would like to invite you to a legendary winter celebration. It starts at 1 in the afternoon. You can stop by the River People's Visitor Center at the park to enjoy some soup. It'll be followed by a variety of events. It's an all-ages winter fest, but dress for the weather. The park daily or annual pass is required, and it is available at the Visitor Center. So, the Cross Ranch State Park, Saturday afternoon.
Here is some amazing singing that is going to be going on in Watford City on Monday night, February 17th. The Terry Barber Trio is going to be at the Watford City High School Theater. And he's a countertenor, which means he sings really high. And he worked with Chanticleer, which is just a fantastic group. The Metropolitan Opera, of course, has a pretty good reputation. He's a great vocalist, and he's got a couple other people with him. And it's put on in Watford City Monday night.
Minot's Got Talent 2020. We know that, but that's the name of the event. It's in Minot on Saturday at the Alshire Theater on the campus of Minot State. You can join them for the fourth annual Minot's Got Talent finalist competition and cash prizes for winners. So it's Saturday from 3 to 5 in the afternoon, again on the campus of Minot State at the Alshire Theater. It costs $10 to get in.
The Book of Goddesses will open for you in Fargo this Sunday, February 16th, the Plains Art Museum. This is a concert. It's chamber music, and it's Deborah Harris, who's the principal flautist from the Fargo-Moorhead Symphony, and Callie Statham, who's the harpist, Tom Christensen's percussionist, and they're going to do this piece by Robert Patterson, and it's based on this book called The Book of Goddesses, right, by Chris Waldhare. And it's kind of a famous modern chamber music piece that's really gotten a lot of attention. It's enhanced by readings taken from women from all parts of the world. And so that is Sunday afternoon, 2 o'clock, The Book of Goddesses for Flute, Harp, and Drums at the Plains Art Museum.
Maleficent Mistress of Evil is in Minot on Saturday at the Ward County Public Library. You can spend an afternoon watching Maleficent Mistress of Evil at the Ward County Public Library. That's a film. There will be comfy pillows to lounge on, and they'll have popcorn, and you can bring your own drink, a soft drink. Children of all ages are welcome, but children under age 6 must be accompanied by an adult. It is Saturday from 11 in the morning till 1 in the afternoon, and it's free.
One of our frequent shout-outs to the Whoever Can Come Band in Valley City at the Barnes County Museum on Saturday, 1 p.m. And hey, bring your sweetheart and some Valentine's Day songs for their free jam session.
Well, Bill, what's your pick this week?
I was really taken by this presentation that is going on today, actually, at 7 p.m. at the former Governor's Mansion Historic Site in Bismarck. And it's a presentation by visual artist Jonathan Campbell. He created art in his stay at the McKenna House, which is a retreat center west of Grand Forks, run by the North Dakota Museum of Art. And he does really interesting work with long exposure photography. Creative light painting is sometimes what it's called. 7 p.m. tonight, free.
Well, my pick is today's the day, Giving Hearts Day. And, of course, Prairie Public's always interested in that because we are member-supported. It's a 24-hour giving event for almost 500 charities across North Dakota and northwestern Minnesota. Anyone with a gift card, debit or credit card, and access to the Internet can donate. A minimum donation of $10 is required, and you can go on the Internet and find out lots more at givingheartsday.org. That's what's happening.
Hi, I'm Barb Gravel, host of the television show Prairie Musicians on Prairie Public, Oakland.
Break out these chains, let's burn it down.
Anchorage. New Orleans.
Rice Krispie treats and noodles. Home alone, Macaulay Culkin. Cause sometimes, I need more space than stars can give me. More sky than God provides me.
Columbus, Georgia. What do these places have in common? They're some of the hometowns of NPR's Tiny Desk Contest winners. The 2020 edition is on, and we'd love to see someone from North Dakota, Eastern Montana, or Northwest Minnesota win it all this year. So Prairie musicians over 18, sound check, and then film yourself performing an original song in front of the Tiny Desk of your choice. Then upload it onto YouTube and do a little dance for luck, because it'll be judged by a distinguished panel that includes multiple Grammy winner Brittany Howard of the Alabama Shakes. The winner will perform at the iconic Tiny Desk in D.C., and embark on a 10-city U.S. concert tour with NPR Music. Entries must be in by March 30th. Just go to npr.org/tinydeskcontest for complete rules and to upload your clip.
Are you ready?
We're so thrilled to welcome the winner of the Tiny Desk Contest!
The 2020 NPR Tiny Desk Contest. Go for it, Prairie musicians!
This is Dakota Datebook for February 13th, celebrating the 100th year since the passage of the 19th Amendment, which gave women the right to vote. This series is written and voiced by Sarah Walker.
On this date in 1920, more than 2,000 women from across the United States, including a delegation from North Dakota, were attending a convention set up through the National American Woman's Suffrage Association at the Congress Hotel in Chicago. The week-long convention was called a celebration of the emancipation of American women. Carrie Chapman Catt, president of the Suffrage Association, stated that this ratification convention was the most momentous of all conventions held in the last 51 years. The women had been hoping to celebrate the passage of the 19th Amendment, but only 31 states had ratified it by the time of the convention. New Mexico came on board before the convention's end, but that was still only 32 of the 36 states required. So instead, the women celebrated their progress, though they still had plenty of work to do. Part of their time at the convention was spent organizing the League of Women Voters to continue forward with their goals. Thus, this convention marked the first National Congress of the League. The women also honored the birth of several important deceased leaders in the fight for women's right to vote. The convention had been planned to coincide with the 100th anniversary of the birth of one of those leaders, Susan B. Anthony, who was born on February 15th. They also honored Dr. Anna Howard Shaw, another well-known leader of the fight, who had recently passed and whose birthday was February 14th. Also mentioned by newspapers was another name sometimes connected to the cause, who was born February 12th, President Abraham Lincoln. Historical record doesn't document Lincoln's feelings on women's suffrage, but many suffragists delighted in using this quote attributed to him. "I go for all sharing the privileges of government who assist in bearing its burdens, by no means excluding women." In actuality, this quote is slightly different and taken out of context, so his original statement did not necessarily connect to women's suffrage. Nevertheless, his words had power, and for many years, suffragists took Lincoln at his word, printing propaganda posters that exclaimed, "Lincoln said women should vote." The rest of the country was finding their way to agree. I'm Sarah Walker.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by the Bush Foundation, investing in great ideas and the people who power them. In Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, and the 23 Native nations that share that same geography. Learn more at bushfoundation.org.
Friday on Main Street, after 30 years of service, David White Thunder Trottier has stepped down as chair of the North Dakota Council on the Arts. On our show tomorrow, we'll visit with him about his involvement in the arts in our state. News director Dave Thompson will join us for our weekly discussion about the week's big stories, and Matt Olean will review the movie Birds of Prey. We hope you can join us for Main Street on Friday. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your day.